Hey team, welcome to another episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast, the podcast where we actually explore the minds of leaders from all around the agriculture and agribusiness space about what it takes to lead intentionally in this industry today. My friends, if there's some value in here for you today, we ask you to subscribe to the podcast, share this with someone who needs to hear the message of what it takes to be intentional. Let's get into the show. Hey team, welcome back to a really special episode of the Intentional Agribusiness Leader Podcast. Today I am joined by Mr. Danny Lecky with Hatch for Hunger. Man, thank you for being on here. I am super excited to dive into this.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I'm honored to be here. When I told some folks I was going to be on here, I was surprised how many of them knew who you were. So it's great. You got a great listenership.
Yeah, well, thank you. And one of the things have been passionate about that I think so many of us are passionate about, the reason that we are signing up to go to work in the agriculture industry for so long, given that there are probably easier places to go make a dollar for our families, right? Is this passion for being able to feed people, feeding the world, right? Ever since we were 4-H and FFA kids growing up, we've been told like our mission is to feed the world. And we've done a pretty good job of that over the years. It gets better and better. Yet there are a lot of people that go hungry, a lot of people that struggle, maybe from different socioeconomic backgrounds and all kinds of things. And that's one of the reasons I'm excited to have this conversation today. We donate a lot of money to local food shelves. I'm passionate about making sure that people get to eat. What can you just tell us about Hatch for Hunger, what you guys are doing there? Give us the 30,000 foot view and then we'll dive in.
Yeah. So Hatch for Hunger was founded in 2015. And it was founded with a vision to take food from farmers and put them on the shelves of food banks and food pantries. We have a mission to become the most reliable source of animal protein for food pantries in the country. We're executing on that mission. Last year, we delivered protein to over 86 food banks and over 20,000 pantries. That equated to 72 million meals, over a million pounds of chicken, and over 11 million eggs to those in need. And our goal is to make sure that every week a family can go to their pantry and get access to good, low-cost, high-value proteins.
I love it. I love it so much. we were saying off the mic, I was sharing with you, often my wife and I will be checking out at the grocery store, and they'll ask us if we want to buy this box of whatever it is, you know, for the food shelf. And there's that part of you that just automatically wants to, because you feel bad saying no. But then you look under the hood and you look what's in there, right? And there's certainly no protein, right? Or no access to protein through that. It's, you know, it's cookies and Goldfish crackers and things like that. Nice snacks, right? Not a lot of nutrition.
Yes.
And so what I think you guys, what you guys are doing to bring protein and make protein more available in that space is really, really important.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. You know, it's our way to really advocate and champion what the American farmer is doing to help feed all consumers, yeah, whether they're a purchasing consumer in a grocery store or they're a consumer at a food pantry. I think if you ask any farmer that you talk to, they don't see a difference. They want to help feed the world. They want to help feed people. Everybody's a consumer. And we've just been so blessed and lucky to have farmers who follow our mission, love our mission, support our mission, and want to make sure that all people, no matter what their circumstances or situation, have access to good, high-quality protein.
Fantastic, man. All right. So let's talk about this a little bit. You're in a leadership role, leading this organization, running a nonprofit. What does it mean for you in this context to be intentional?
That's a great question. You know, I think as I came into this, one of the things I really had to do to remain intentional was truly be self-aware of my actions, my words, really create a clear path and plan. You know, I came into this with no nonprofit experience. I came into this with ag experience, from corporate ag experience and sales experience. And if I wasn't self-aware of my abilities, if I wasn't aware of creating a clear plan with 30-day objectives and 60-day objectives and 120-day objectives, I don't know that we would have the success that we're having in impacting people. So one of the things I like to say is, a lot of times you come into things with the best of intentions, but if you don't lead with intention, you're not going to execute on what you wanted to achieve, right? And so a big push here is to make sure we act with that intention and that we act on the objectives and the goals, and we look at those and we debrief and we follow up every quarter, and we make sure that we're achieving with intention the things that we want to do here to create the biggest impact.
I love it. We put that on a quote card and stick it all over LinkedIn, all over the internet,
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's so true though. Like everything in this world was created with the best of intention. Culture, ideas, but if you don't follow through with intention, it just disappears. And it was just a good idea.
Absolutely. And it does it, would you say, maybe versus being in the traditional corporate space, is there more weight on being intentional? Because the reality is, like, the work you're doing here literally puts food in people's mouth, potentially in the mouths of people that can't afford it.
Yes. No, there is a whole
Is
nother.
that heavier than promoting, like we were talking about, promoting nitrogen stabilizers at
Yeah, I
earlier
mean,
times in our career, right? So.
there is a heaviness to it. If we miss a date, right? The weather delays a load of eggs to get to a food bank. That's a day that somebody's not going to eat. Those are things that we have to navigate and figure out. Expenses, right? If I have to go to a meeting in a hotel is $200. I think to myself, how many eggs could I have bought for this? I have to make the most of my time while I'm here to get the best return to make sure that it pays off so that, that $200 could have subsidized 1,000 dozen eggs. There is a weight to everything that we do. There's not a freeness, right, to spending or to ideas because there is that impact that just hits at a level.
Fascinating stuff, man. So talk to us a little bit about building out your organization. So you came in to run this space. You're given the command to run a nonprofit, like a business, which I love, because a lot of dollars that get donated in nonprofits go to waste. They're not very efficient, right? And so how are you guys solving for that efficiency and making sure that this thing runs like a top?
I mean, we took a for-profit approach, as you mentioned, and our goal is to have 10% of the protein that we receive donated, and then 90% of that is purchased on a cost-plus basis. We want to create revenue for the American farmer so that they can run their business effectively, make a little bit of money to make sure they cover their costs and then some. And if we do that effectively, we are able to get protein to food banks at or below their budget. And by doing that, that creates program revenue for us that covers our expenses of our people. As that's expanded, we've been able to grow our team from 3 to 8. It's all based on the program revenue side. That's not donations, that's not grants, that's not gifts. And what's unique about running this like a business is that when we receive donations, all of that is for the mission. And we truly believe that's how nonprofits should be run. The mission is the impact, it's the protein, it's the delivery. It's not the mission of paying for operations for people, for a new role, right? And so that's really the way that we've done that. And we really try and compensate like a for-profit. Retain top talent. We don't tell people that this is going to be easy. As you and I were talking earlier, we want 5 years of experience for every 2 years that they're here. We want people to grow and develop and learn and use this as either a place to build a career or a launching point into something bigger and better. This isn't your typical nonprofit where you have a lot of volunteers or you have somebody who's making $30,000 a year making big impact. We truly want to reward those who are going to come on board and really help us advance our mission.
It's a very intentional multiplier effect, setting the expectation
It
of the front.
is. Yeah. And we talk a lot about being a multiplier. right? On a small team. So certainly it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the in our recent study, my wife and I have come across this definition of stewardship. And we think about stewardship, and I've been asking my audiences lately, like, what is stewardship, right? And some people say, like, it means to take ownership of something, it means to be in charge of something, it means that, you know, it's yours to care for, that kind of thing. And I think all those are correct. And to add on to it, one of the other definition that we've come across is that to be a steward is to be a multiplier, right? And when we start doing different math, when we think about what's required for me to be intentional as a leader, right? Because as you were saying before, if we're not intentional, if we intend well, but we don't show up and execute well, right? We end up with unintentional results at the end of the day, right? And so thinking about ourselves as stewards, we have to think about ourselves as multipliers. And that's
Agreed.
really important. What's the multiplier effect of dollars or resources that come into an organization like yours?
Yeah, I mean, I think one example, if you look at dollars and cents, right? And so we were given a gift of $75,000, and we were able to turn that $75,000 through a subsidy program into a million dozen eggs.
Wow.
Million.
A million dozen.
Yeah. Just by using that at a nickel at a time per dozen or a dime per dozen at a time, working within the food bank budgets to ensure that we could keep it going further. You know, the typical model would say, take that $75,000 and you probably could get 50,000 dozen eggs, two truckloads of eggs right now. But we said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to have an outsized impact with these funds. We're going to show people that this can be done differently. We're going to create our own subsidy program. And that really helped us grow during very difficult times when you think about bird flu. And eggs were a meme. You know, people were getting engaged with a dozen eggs because they are so expensive. Try being a nonprofit that's trying to sell eggs into a food bank when they're $5 a dozen. We really utilized our funds in very creative ways to make them last longer so that the food banks could, again, sustainably and consistently get that protein to their neighbors on a weekly basis.
I'm still really upset about the $5 dozen of eggs that's still.
It quite hasn't gone away yet, has it? It's
It has not gone away at all. That's still there. So occasionally you can get them a little bit cheaper, right? But I mean, even on the lower end, we're still talking $3, $3.5 for a dozen, right?
Yeah, you know,
Not when we were growing up, you get them for 69 cents.
yeah, and it wasn't even that long ago, you know, even in between some of this that you could. And that's agriculture, right? You know, the farmers are price takers, not price makers. And, you know, you make hay while the sun shines and you probably run a deficit the rest of the time. So that's part of what feeding the world looks like, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, team, please forgive this quick intrusion into the podcast, but I have a really important announcement that I want everybody to get their earballs on. And that is that we have an upcoming Thriving Leader event coming up August 21st and 22nd. The Thriving Leader is our flagship program. We have run this thing over 135 times across the broad scope of agriculture. Thousands of people have gone through this, and our coaching programs and our public events each year are free. We only run two of these per year because of that. And your next chance to get access is coming up on August 21 and 22. The next one will not be until 2025. So we hope to see you. It's in Kansas City. Head on over to thriving-leader.com. That's thriving-leader.com. You get all the details and to book a meeting to see how you can get free access for you and some of your team coming up at the Thriving Leader in Kansas City, Missouri, August 21st and 22nd, 2024. We'll see you there. So, what are some of the big hurdles that you're encountering in that supply chain that are preventing us from being able to get more of this food, more of this protein, in the mouths of families?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at hurdles, the number one biggest hurdle to getting more protein actually isn't dollars. It's going to be the cold storage. It's the ability to safely store the protein at the pantry level. When you look across the country, there's 60,000 pantries in the United States, and you're going from church basement pantries all the way up to pantries that are serving 18,000 people a month. And we've seen that as a big issue. And Feeding America has research out there that says at the pantry level, there's a 500 million pound protein gap. And a lot of that stems from the ability to store it. And so we partnered with the American Egg Board and America's Egg Farmers to create a program that would award coolers to pantries across the country last year. We were able to award 36 coolers across 17 states. And those 36 coolers are helping on a monthly basis serve 107,000 unique individuals. And those 36 coolers create 72,000 pounds of new space for food pantries to place protein or other perishable goods in. Pantries were built to receive highly processed, shelf-stable items that were given to them from grocery stores or from other avenues. They weren't necessarily built to receive perishable, nutrient-dense proteins, dairy items, things of that nature. And so it's going to take time for them to start to build and evolve their spaces in order to do that. But that's a big hurdle. And then, another hurdle, we kind of talked about it just briefly, but when avian influenza bird flu hit, we had just shifted our model in a really big way to buying eggs. And when eggs were $5 in the store, $8 in the store, we were still trying to source eggs from egg producers. And there weren't eggs on the shelves of grocery stores. But we were able to grow 400% bird flu. We created the subsidy program I mentioned earlier when we helped make these funds cover 1 million dozen eggs. We raised $250,000 in 45 days when this hit because we made a plea saying, there's food banks who are expecting these eggs and they can't afford it. Can you help us? And that money lasts for a full year and really spread out the expense of the eggs throughout the year. And so I think when you look at hurdles and you look at these opportunities, hurdles are nothing but opportunities. And, our board chair and founder said to me in this moment, when I thought I had made the biggest career mistake of my life, leaving comfort of corporate America and going to this nonprofit, he said, never waste a good crisis. Boy, we didn't. We doubled down and we grew 400% in that year. And we went to 5 million dozen eggs to now 11 million last year to probably 15 million this year. So there's defining moments in a business, in a career. And that was a defining hurdle and moment for us that has changed the entire landscape of what we do. And we could have easily just said, you know what, we're going to sit back and just wait it out. But we went on the offensive. We raised money, we created a program, and we helped feed people. And it was incredibly impactful.
First of all, just congratulations on sticking that out and being able to navigate such a challenging time and overcome that with such a great level of intention, not to beat the word, right? But I mean, you really have to knuckle down with a lot of intention to be able to curate the level of, at least as my mind is grasping it right now, just the level of logistics and planning and understanding the financial aspect and the impact of, like, how do you get, what do we say, $75,000 before to go to buy 1 million dozen eggs?
Yeah. Lots of
It
spreadsheets.
literally, I mean, my mind is, while you're talking, I'm trying to do the math and I can't get there.
Yeah. It's
Easily in
fascinating.
I can't see it in my mind, So, okay, but I want to walk this backwards a little bit because you're accomplishing something that's huge. Like, this is major impact in the world. It's major impact. I mean, even just down to the, I'll share with you, man. I mean, I grew up in a small town in central Minnesota. I distinctly remember one of my core memories, less positive one, I guess, went from when I was a kid, was walking out of the grocery store one day. And I remember my mom had like a block of cheese, right? The old, and then like a couple boxes of potato chips. They were in, it was a white box with like black stripes on it with black lettering, very plain, nothing fancy, right?
Yeah.
The cheese, and then a box of powdered milk, right? And there was those three things I can remember. And we walk out of the store, we didn't pay for it. And so I'm like tugging on my mom on the way out saying, don't we have to pay for that? Don't we have to pay for that? And she shushed me, right? And they shoved me in the car. I'm assuming because she probably was embarrassed as we're walking out of the food pantry, as I now understand it.
Yeah.
So as somebody who grew up depending on these things in a family that was at least for a while dependent on that help in our local community, I'm certainly super passionate. I lived it. I'm a product of it. And obviously there wasn't a lot of, especially back then, there certainly wouldn't have been a lot of fresh protein available. Right. And, you know, at the level. So, as we work this problem backwards, I'm thinking about somebody like my mom, you know, going in to be able to access that, and thinking about, wow, like you've got to get that from the farmer right into Nancy's hands. There's so many steps walking through there. So what are just like, maybe, I don't know, one or two things that you do to kind of keep yourself moving forward intentionally so that you don't get lost in the details? Cause I'm, you know, this is a leadership podcast. So thinking about it from a leadership level, how do you keep your team in check? How do you keep your processes in check? What's that look like?
Yeah. Well, we have accountability, right? First and foremost, because we do everything shared. So there's shared files that share the processes, and we move it from person to person. So everybody knows who's up. I'm even on those as well, because there's still food banks that I'm working with. And so I'm in those files. We work with such great intention and collaboration around each of these steps. I think because you talked about earlier, the heaviness of what we do, we're helping feed people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to us to build these processes, to build the steps. We have our SOPs, and we run this in a very streamlined fashion.
Mm-hmm.
We have an egg buyer. The egg buyer gives us pricing. We put the pricing in a tool. We then reach out to the food banks. We figure out what days they want it. We reach out to freight. Freight helps it get delivered to the food bank, and then the food bank gets it and they get it to the pantry, and then the pantry gets it to, you know, Nancy in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But we've really been able to figure this out in a way that helped us go from sub a million dozen in a year to months where we did 1.3 million dozen in a month,
mm-hmm.
15 months later.
Yeah.
And it was really us sitting around in those quarterly team meetings and saying on a whiteboard, what are all the steps? Who's got your back if you're out? What is going to catch us if we get in a pinch? What's the next step? So we look at contingencies, but we do run a very decentralized group with a lot of autonomy. So there isn't anybody waiting for the next person to move.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, you know, we've read a couple books, and one of the ones I love is Unreasonable Hospitality. And there's this quote in there, and it's, what would you do if you knew you could not fail? And that mm-hmm. has governed us for the last probably year and a half. When I look at the team, I say, you know, nothing's impossible. We don't expect perfection, but what would you do if you could not fail? And, you know, we've been able to grow this impact across the country. We've been able to build a cooler program. We've built a disaster relief program. We have our own egg carton. These are all things that were born out of this idea of what would we do if we just couldn't fail? Mm-hmm. We said, but we're going to have an egg carton. By golly, we got an egg carton.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible when you adopt that mindset. Now, there's a lot of work that goes into the execution of it, right? And I tell my team, as we've talked about earlier, I don't want an idea guy or girl. I want somebody who's going to execute on the idea. Mm-hmm. Idea people aren't helpful without the intention to execute on the idea, because otherwise it creates a lot of work for everybody else. And so we really have to be focused and build our ideas and build our steps and processes around executing on these, and being careful too, you know. We don't take on more than two big projects at a time. Any more than that, and we're going to be spread too thin. So we're really self-aware of that, and really working with the team to ensure that, we're reflecting on the wins too. Because if you don't, you can get lost in all of this process, logistics, and it start to get a little mundane too, right? Because now we're so well oiled. It's just, we're going to do this step, this step, this step, and it's getting delivered. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, let's back up. Let's reflect. Look at all this impact. Look at what you're doing. What can we do differently? What can we do better? Oh, let's get into chicken. And we started delivering chicken. So, I think those moments are really important when you're building out that process, because our process was built in a way that allowed us to, again, I wouldn't say on a whim, there was intention, but add chicken and start delivering chicken. It built such a good process that the team believed in, that the team built, and we were able to execute.
Wow. How much of your time has then ha has to get dedicated to planning and thinking through these things so that you can execute it versus being in the execution phase?
I don't have enough time to plan. But I have three young kids at home. So, I think any waking hour, I'm always thinking about the vision, the plan, the next steps, because also we are a nonprofit, right? So that's just the business side. Then we have to start thinking about the fundraising side as well. And there's the marketing side where we're working to advocate and educate. For the American egg farmer and the American, broiler processor and producer. So there's so many different areas, but what I try and do is really control my calendar, control my time. So at least, once a week, there's 2 hours dedicated just for me where I can sit down and really start to just honestly bulletize it. I heard somebody say once, you have to write yourself clear. And so just write it out. And that helps guide us into the next phase of growth, the next phase of intention, the next phase of evolution that we're going to move into. But it's those moments, whether it's on a piece of paper, whether it's on the whiteboard. Whiteboard is riddled with stuff. If I was in my office, you'd probably see it. But controlling your calendar is something I learned years ago when I was at a corporate setting where your calendar would just magically fill up. If you didn't do it yourself. And so I'm really intentional about creating blocks of time to allow for that. And then of course, there's always the weekends or free moments where you're like, hey, that's a good idea. I'm going to write it down in my phone as a note. But you have to be intentional with your time and your calendar.
That's one of the reason I asked the question, right? Is because to reference where we started this, right? Like, isn't that heavy? Like, I mean, sometimes when we're doing such an important job or a job that's perceived as very important, it becomes very natural for us to sort of sacrifice all of our time, our peace, and our sleep in order to get the job done. And I see that a lot. That's a lot of our clients across the broad scope of agriculture fit that demographic. Now, there are times and seasons when it's like it's go time, right? Maybe it's the spring season planting, maybe it's fall season harvest, or certain, in the production cycles, obviously have different cycles. There's different business cycles. And right, it's also really important as an intentional leader to make sure that you're being intentional for you, there's got to be a good, healthy, clear-headed Danny running this thing, right? Because there's so much of that. There's so much trickle down, right? That comes from your seat.
Absolutely.
That's
Yeah. And
really.
I mean, I think part of that, just a quick add-on, is we put family and friends first. If something is going on at any point, any of my team members know they can leave at any moment and somebody else is going to pick up their work and they can go take care of their family and their friends or things that happen, right? That is huge to all of this being successful, that there's such comfort in what they do and who they work with, that there's no secrets, there's no bringing your not full self to work, right? You're 100% ready to go and know that if anything happens, somebody's there for you. So That has been a pillar for me as I've led this organization is family is 100% first all the time. It doesn't matter if you just got back from vacation and something happens, my first answer is go.
Right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I love it. Well, I want to spend so much more time dissecting this and talking more about it and learning how it all works. Super passionate about it, but let's bring it to a point. Danny, talk to us a little bit about how can we get involved? What are the current needs? Let's say this is out in front of people probably in April or May of 2024. How do we help?
Yeah. I think as we evolve and we look to grow our reach and our impact, we're looking for folks who can help support the food pantries we're working with. We're looking for companies who want to step up and maybe sponsor a cooler. We talk about that 500 million pound protein gap, a lot of that having to do with cold storage. I would be happy to have more companies in agriculture stepping up. A cooler costs roughly about $4,500 and it can hold 2,000 pounds of food. Check out our social media. You'll see lots of images and pictures and testimonials about the coolers that we have launched. That's kind of our big push right now is, funding to help support increasing and expanding the access so that all people, again, no matter what their circumstances are, can go to their pantry and have a choice. We say we're solving for choice. They can have a choice to get the nutrient-dense food, the animal proteins, that are so expensive. Even if they have SNAP and WIC benefits, it's challenging for them to get it. And even if their pantry has money, a lot of times they don't have the ability to store it. And so come alongside us, visit our website, hatchforhunger.com, find ways to get involved in your local pantry. Rising tide floats all boats, right? And so it's not about who gets what credit. It's more about the mission than it is, anything else. Than it is getting credit. And so look us up. If you have interest as a company, we'd love to sponsor a cooler with you. If you're listening to this and just help feed people, we can change the trajectory of the lives of the future children who are going to lead this country, who are going to be the doctors, the teachers, the ag sales reps, the CEOs of companies. These are people much like yourself, Mark, who, if you didn't have that opportunity, who knows where you would be today? You're changing the trajectory of lives through animal protein. That's our goal. That's our objective. And we believe that people should have access to the right kinds of food. It's a human right.
Man, fantastic conversation. Fantastic share. Can't wait to get involved on our level with our business and bring some other friends in the ag industry along with us. So Danny, thanks for making the time to be on the Intentional Agribusiness Leader podcast today.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, Mark.
I hope today's episode brought you a great deal of value about what it takes to lead life and lead in this industry with intention. If you want to go deeper on the topic of leading with intention, I encourage you to head on over to intentionaltoolbox.com and get the 7 free tools that will help you to lead your life in all areas with a greater deal of intention. That's intentionaltoolbox.com. And finally, if this message resonated today, if there's something in here that you got value from, I promise you there's someone else in your life who also would get value from this. So please share the episode, share the podcast, and make sure that you subscribe.